been a long time since those days.
Feeling old, feeling old. Better have my donuts over here with Bad News Ramen. Yeah, like I was mentioning, your godson, my oldest boy, turned 18 today. Yesterday. Him turning 18 made me feel older than me turning 40. But it's all right.
I have nothing to say to that. That was pretty reflective right there. How do you think I feel, dude? I'm like a year older than you are, man. Well, close to it.
Yeah, well.
Couple months.
Yeah, but again, like.
I remember when I was changing that dude's diapers, dude.
Yeah. For you, I mean. Like, for me, I didn't. Turning 40 didn't bother me. So I don't know if it bothered you mentally or not. But.
It didn't bother me.
Like I'm saying, like, me having an 18-year-old, that hit me. Like, your oldest girl is same age as my younger boys, so like it's like when she hits 18, like whatever age you're gonna be, I don't know. I'm not trying to do math right now, but then like that'll hit you, I'm sure. But
I remember when we had a conversation when you were saying that you know you were gonna have a kid, and that was groundbreaking right there, dude. that was crazy back then, you know.
Mm. Yeah. I don't even. I mean, do you remember the conversation?
I remember the conversation. I don't want to bring up the conversation, okay. But I
don't remember.
But. I remember the conversation.
Okay. Did it go all right?
Well, obviously, yeah. He's 18, right?
Works for me. Works for me.
There are some questions about you know.
Yeah.
About
I
you know.
I was 22.
Some decisions and stuff, and yeah. You know, you made the right choice. And we'll just leave it at that. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a ton of.
There wasn't a ton.
There wasn't a ton of choice.
But yeah, throw it out there, right?
I mean, I guess. No, yeah. I don't think we really discussed that. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really. There wasn't really much to think about. It was like it was going to happen.
No, there wasn't.
So
you
18
you,
years
you,
later, here it is.
Yeah, your heart was in the right place the whole time. So yeah. That kid has helped me out through a lot. You know, I mean, like for a while, he's like the only thing I you know that I really like live for. You know, like knowing that there was someone that you know. Some kid, and I was the godfather. I took that a lot. I took that. That was a very positive aspect of my life when stuff wasn't so positive. So, you know, it makes me feel makes me feel a certain way too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We got him here. So.
Yeah.
he's all right. He's all right.
He's okay, kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very very respectful towards me. You know, he doesn't act like he hates me and stuff. So.
No, that's reserved for one of the younger boys.
Oh, come on, dude. That kid loves me, dude.
You're good now.
Yeah. It was bumpy for a while, yeah. But yeah.
Smoothed out that road. So yeah.
Are we talking wrestling today? Or are we taking a trip down memory lane?
Carlito, Charlie Brigante, how doing? I mean, I think we got to talk some wrestling, man. I mean, we
I'll cut your fucking liver out.
Okay. It's in the box. I just got to tell you.
I like how he says, like, he throws it there. He tells me the second he threatens to cut his liver out. Okay. I mean, the whole thing is, like, right when he walked in the room, you should have, like, told him, like, I know how Carlito Brigante is. Maybe he tried to pretend it off. He's like, oh, no, I didn't take your money. I cut your liver out. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't hold out very long.
Used to be wrong.
Yeah. Some kind of smell you and me.
2030 Tau. All right. That was a trip down memory lane.
Yeah, that was. Haven't watched Carlito's Way in a while. Might have to.
I saw it a couple weeks ago. It was on, and I had to watch it. Yeah,
you were engulfed.
I was engulfed. Yeah, that Benny Blanco scene still kills me, dude.
At the end, when
it's like he should have never got on that boat, man. You know, he would have been fine. You know, so yeah, sad story.
Yeah, sad. Carlito Brigante, you know, and never mind. Yeah.
So you want to talk about Prince at all, or?
Well,
or has that been done by better people?
No, I mean, I'm not gonna go too crazy with it. All I would say is, like, I wasn't, you know, I like some of Prince's songs, but I wasn't like a huge Prince fan. Like, as a youngster, I was definitely Michael Jackson guy,
yeah.
And but over, like, you know, my wife is a really big Prince fan, and so. When we were, you know, pretty early on, somewhere around 2000, 2001,
Right around the time your kid was close to being born.
Yeah.
Well, he was already born back then, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So we were living up in the Bay Area. And he was on tour. So I took her to see Prince at San Jose State.
Nice.
And it was like, I was like, whatever, you know, she wants to go, I'm fine. But he put on like an awesome show. Like this guy, dude, he was badass live. And like, he was old already. And like the energy he had for the whole time, the band was sick. Homeboy was still doing the splits and all this crazy stuff. And like that really kind of like made me a much bigger fan just seeing him live. And so, yeah, you know, I became more of a fan, like more of the songs. And again, so my wife, her birthday was a month or so ago, and he was playing the Bay Area this this tour he's doing where he's just like him on the piano the whole time, and he did like the first two shows so went so well that he decided to do a last minute third show the day before her birthday. So like, hey, you know, you want to go to the show? And she's like, yeah. So you know, we bought a couple tickets. Paid a little cash for it, but like.
So you saw him live twice?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's the only person I ever seen live twice. And then it was like a great show. I really didn't even know what to expect once, because I didn't even know until halfway there on the bar ride that, you know, he was just going to be on a piano. Like, well, what's that going to be like? But like, he rocked it, and it was pretty impressive to see. And then, you know, it's just one of those things where it's kind of like last minute and it's like, you know, it's a couple hundred bucks each ticket. Do you want to go? She did. I don't have any problem. You know, it's her birthday present and stuff. But then, you know, for the way things worked out, like to know, like we actually, that was like the last chance we were going to get to see him play. And, you know, we went to not his last show, but like the last tour that he did. Kind of like we talked about, like when we talked about it, and she was like, yeah, like it's a good thing that we went and saw him when we did. So, you know, it sucks, and the guy's a great, great performer. So yeah, he will be missed, but a lot of good music, and just kind of like an interesting guy. It's funny, even going back ever since and watching like the Chappelle Show Prince episode like a couple times, and like that was hilarious. But then there was this picture that went around. I don't know if you saw it. But there's like the actual picture with young Prince and Charlie Murphy playing basketball back in like the 80s or something like that, where the story actually came from. So I don't know, that like that was kind of funny, the whole thing. But yeah, that
I'm bored. Yeah, I make some pancakes.
Yeah. I wish I could say the same, bitches.
So we got a lot of stuff to get to. We have wrestling to talk about.
Well, we can
hold off on that one.
You want to hold off on that?
Yeah, let's hold off on that. I think we need to give the Muda Skill treatment for the other piece of news.
Okay.
But we have Raw to get to. We have Game of Thrones to get to. You saw that, right?
I did.
Okay. And then yeah. And then I don't know about. I mean, Daredevil. I finished the entire second season of Daredevil.
We should table that. There's a lot of other stuff to get to.
Too much, right?
Game of Thrones.
Loaded show, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The guests are packed, so...
So
you want to go into the Raw, then?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you... You kind of laid out a couple weeks ago. We took the week off last week because of Warrior playoffs and stuff, and that's a whole other thing we can talk about right there, but... you know, it seems like what you're saying might come true, you know, like that there might be some stuff with Guns and Gallows, and that might, you know, change, you know, there might be a case where either AJ Styles comes out as a new champion, or Roman Reigns gets a real big heel push if he teams up with the Guns and Gallows. So what is it? Are you EPMDing it right now? Are you PMDing it where your hands are behind your head and you're seeing it coming? Or what do you kind of see with the developments that have happened with the recent Guns and Gallows storyline, which is actually, if you think about it, for these two guys, it's a really good storyline. You know, I mean, it's they're putting them in the right spot, and it's created a lot of not anticipation, but a lot of conversation, if you will.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's definitely, there's a lot of buzz there.
Buzz was the word I was looking for. But you did watch Prince twice, yeah, you know.
Yeah, so.
And I was a huge Purple Rain fan. I mean, that's one of my favorite albums of all time, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
and Little Red Corvette too. So.
Yes, and as we discussed, you had the advantage of having the older sister to
I did
to hip you to these things before I did, but I came along eventually.
You came.
I came.
I'm good. I'm hard.
I can't really say the way that it's developed that I think Guns and Gallows are going to turn on AJ and join up with Roman. It doesn't really seem that like that's the case to me. But I mean, it's possible still. I mean, I'd like it, but I'm happy with what the story is. I think the story's going really well. To me, it's more of a question whether Guns and Gallows are going to kind of form something up with AJ, or whether it's going to happen with Finn Balor, because that's like a whole nother angle that we'll get into later, maybe if we got time, with the Samoa Joe thing. But I think
I don't know about the Samoa Joe thing.
Oh, Balor lost the title, NXT title, Samoa Joe.
When the hell this happened?
On a house show over the weekend.
And so they haven't showed on the network yet.
Tomorrow on NXT.
Okay.
But they spoiled it when it happened. Like, this thing was going out like Saturday night. So for them to kind of be so out with it, and then Finn's came out and said he's staying in NXT, which, I mean, I don't think him saying that means anything. But I think the bigger question is there going to be something going on with Guns and Gallows joining up with AJ? Or is Finn Balor going to make his appearance and get involved in that somehow? Or is what I was kind of proposing a couple weeks ago, I think it's still possible. It's probably like smaller than 10% chance that it's going to happen. I think if you're really trying to, I mean, if you want to do a Roman Reigns heel turn, that's the way to go. And for me, I think that should be what it is. Because, I mean, I think Guns and Gallows are natural heels. I think AJ is best served as a babyface, especially right now. And so I don't think, just the way things are working, like Roman Reigns is really getting, he's actually like really getting a reaction. This Raw was dead, I think, the crowd, but 2 weeks ago, the week before that, when he comes out, I mean, he's getting a real reaction. And, you know, if it's time to, you know, turn him heel, like that's the guys to put him with. And then you have like a red hot baby face to go with AJ to put him on the chase. And then, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe AJ, maybe Finn Balor helps out AJ. You know, who knows what happens, right? I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities.
Well, payback is a chance to do something in either direction, right? Because I feel that if Roman Reigns keeps on going on the path that he is that it's going to turn into, like right now, it's like a buzz hate, right? It's like kind of cool to hate Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. And he kind of has that going for him. And I think his character, the way his character has been, is that he's not, you know, you're not force feeding the babyface champion. You know, he's pretty much saying what he wants to say. I don't think him as a promo guy can handle that right now. I think you need to steer him in one direction or the other. Payback can either be a case where they reset everything and say, okay, we mess up with Roman Reigns. This 2-year build that we did didn't work. So let's put it on AJ and let's make him a heel or whatever. I think that would be good. And then maybe they try to save face and make, you know, Roman Reigns like a really good baby face. But the problem you have with that is that I think people, you know, are pining for some form of the Bullet Club. I think the three of those guys work really well together. I think, AJ, it's funny, like when AJ first came in, we gave him no chance to move the needle in any way, right? Like we thought that he'd put on good matches, but I mean, his character works right now as a babyface. It can work as a heel. I still think they're invested in Roman Reigns. I think the good way to go is to organically make him a heel, and I think you can do that with Guns and Gallows. It'd be pretty interesting to see. I mean, because you have Seth Rollins. You know, if you ever want to make, when Seth Rollins comes back, I think he's going to get the natural babyface push, pairing up against Roman Reigns against those guys, and even like stealing some shows by having AJ and Seth Rollins become babyfaces. You know, like a babyface team, and then you also have Dean Ambrose. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really easy way to kind of have like just really kind of two really good type of factions, and then, you know, they're building their undercards so nice, or their midcards so nice, is that you know, you really care about what's going on with that. I don't like Cesaro's new direction. I guess, you know, with the suit and
you don't like the 007
gimmick. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's not that I don't like it, but I mean, it's like he should be able to stand on his own. But I don't mind the program that he has with Miz. I think that's working as well. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting to say the least.
Yeah, and I think, kind of to finish what I was saying, because I think I kind of dovetailed there, but like I think I think with AJ, turning AJ heel right now is forcing that a little bit. And not saying it wouldn't work, but like it's like you're going to force...
Don't mess with a good thing, right?
Yeah, you're going to force this guy that's having a really good babyface run to go heel, which he's pretty much better at being a babyface than a heel. And then you're going to continue to force Roman Reigns to be a babyface, which like pretty much like all market research tells you he should probably be a heel right now.
So that's the way it's going to be. They're going to turn... I mean, since it doesn't make sense, that's probably what they're going to do, right?
Right. That's, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like I'd let... I think the way the story is unfolding, I think it's right for you to do that those guys turn on AJ. I think that'd be the best case scenario. I think there's a less than 10% chance that's going to happen. But I also say I think Roman Reigns is doing a really good job in the role that he's in right now. I think that's working. If he stays as he is, I think that can work for a while too. But then, you know, you also, and I don't even want to go into this any further, but you also have that announcement. Cena's not that far along, away right now either, and that also like kind of is going to factor in what direction people go in, right? Which I think, you know, you want him coming back and him going against Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns would have to be the face, the heel in that, and like that would be one way you could really solidify him. But I mean, I'm just kind of making this up as I go along, but like if you want to solidify Roman Reigns and have him beat Cena, he's got Guns and Gallows backing him up. Like, there's a lot of ways that, like, avenues you can take to have Roman Reigns win and stay getting over as a heel and have Cena, you know, not really, like, lose any face, right?
Well, and I think Cena can be viable in that type of scenario as well, right? As much as he can be with the type of character he is. You know, it's a case where... I don't know. I mean, it's been nice not having Cena around.
Yeah, totally, And I'm not looking forward to it. It's as you've coined the phrase many times, he's the necessary evil. But I like the way the show's developing right now. Like you said, the Cesaro Miz feud is really good. That one's interesting too, because I want Cesaro to win. I think he's clearly the better performer, but the Miz is having a really good run right now with Maurice. And of all the times that they've thrown that belt on him, and like just because, and they really shouldn't have, they just had
this
no direction.
This is the first time
it
feels like it's viable,
right? And it's probably the time that the guy he's going against deserves it the most compared to anybody. So, you know, I don't know, because I think the Miz works with like him and Maurice is working, but a lot of the reason why it's working is because he has that belt to back it up. So I don't know if he loses, if he goes and drops it right away to Cesaro. It's gonna kind of suck for Miz.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You got anything more on that? Like, do you have a feel either way which way you'd want that to go?
I want Miz to retain. Mm-hmm. I think. I mean, it's the easy way out to say like, oh, Cesaro should win that belt. But I think the chase is. I mean, it's the first pay per view after a big event like WrestleMania. I think in Cesaro's case, I think the chase for him is better. I'm kind of afraid that. If he gets the belt, can he sustain? I mean, I think he can sustain what he is because it is Cesaro. But at the same time, it's kind of funny that they do put him in that 007 gimmick just because it's like he doesn't need that gimmick, right? I mean, he can just come out and, you know, be who he is. But I think the way they see it, and, you know, from the infamous line saying that Cesaro doesn't relate to the fans, I think to a small part, I think it's kind of. Just the WWE doing a little bit too much. It's like, you already relates with the fans. You don't need to give him a gimmick, right? I mean, just kind of let him go because the guy was over before he got hurt.
Yeah, but it's not like some outrageous gimmick, right? It's fine. It to me, it's more, I don't look at it so much as a 007 gimmick as much as it, he looks like he's coming out as a professional, right? And it's a little bit of an extension of what he was doing before he got hurt, right? Because him and Kid, they come out kind of wearing suits and looking like pros. So, you know, it's a step further now that he's wearing a tux. And they had like the little like bullet barrel thing going on his Titantron or whatever. It's subtle enough that as a gimmick, it doesn't bother me. It's not like that much of a gimmick. It's still more or less him. And kind of actually works very well with the way that Miz is kind of... Yeah. Taking his gimmick up to doing the movie quotes for him also being kind of like a movie star. So I would even be curious like how long this gimmick's going to last, like if it's something that's going to continue after he's done feuding with The Miz. But like I think the whole thing works right now.
Yeah, I would. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I would like to see The Miz have that belt for 5 to 6 months, you know, and really kind of build.
I don't know if I'll go that far.
But you know what I mean, though, right? I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, you look at the guy like the Honky Tonk Man who held that belt forever, and you just hated that guy. And the whole thing was, you didn't get tired of him because he was definitely like the weakest performer out there. All the guys that he faced, the other guys were way more over than this guy was, but you just hated him so much. So when he finally did lose, I think he probably lost to the Ultimate Warrior, I think. And it was just kind of a case where it was finally, the rain was
lost in like 10 seconds.
Yeah. And the rain was finally over. And then you never heard from Honky Tonk Man again. I wouldn't mind seeing, I think The Miz, out of all the iterations that they had of this guy, I think this is his most successful run so far. And this is talking about he had the World Heavyweight title run, which I thought was successful. You didn't like it. And I didn't like it, but I liked the idea of it, right? I mean, I liked the aspect of...
I found myself rooting for him because he was going against Cena at Mania.
But, and I think his work leading up to that Mania, I thought his mic work was really good, right?
Yeah, he's gone through phases when his mic work's been good, and then he's gone through phases when his mic work's been, like, played out and redundant. And that's more of the reason why I say I don't know if I want to see a 5 to 6 month run out of this guy. But I'm saying for right now... Like, say, Cesaro.
Let's see what he can do, yeah. Right? I mean, because
my thing is, Cesaro got really shortchanged twice. Okay, he had a really bad luck with Tyson Kidd getting hurt on what was like a really good tag team, and he had a really long United States Championship run where they completely buried this fucking guy. And like, I understand the thing with the chase, and. And, like, I do, in a sense, yeah, I do like that. But this guy's been, like, held down for way too long. And he's got, like, no, I'll even three now because he was really starting to get a babyface push before he got that injury, too. And it's like, I don't want to sit here, I don't want it to be another Daniel Bryan situation where you put this guy on the chase forever and ever and then nothing ever happens and then finally he gets a shot and he gets hurt again, right? Like, he's good to go. He's, like... He's overdue. You want to make that belt viable. And I think Miz is doing a good job of making it viable right now. But let this man get his run and let him have a good Intercontinental run and make something out of it.
Well, make it like a best out of three, right?
Yeah, if they...
Like, have him lose at Payback.
Yeah, if they extend this feud out over a month or two and then Miz loses it at the next pay-per-view or somewhere, I'm totally happy with that, right? But I don't know that I want to go through, like, 5 or 6 months of Miz, like, beating him and then beating Dolph Ziggler and then Miz starts to get kind of stale. Like, there's a lot to be said about kind of like, it goes back to the New Day, right? When the New Day...
Well, that's what I'm kind of like comparing it to, right?
Right. When they won that title and then it worked. And then after a couple of months, they lost it to the Primetime Players. And then I was happy with that because I wanted to see Titus and then get a run. But it really wasn't as good, and there was something missing when New Day wasn't the champions. And ever since they've put the tag team back on them, then the thing's been working. And I think there's something similar what you're saying with the Miz, that he's got something going right now. But I don't feel like the same in that. Like, I already know Cesaro is a better worker and a better overall performer than the Miz. Whereas, like, there was definitely a step down when the Primetime Players were the champions compared to what the New Day were doing. Like, in the ring, so I don't see it being exactly the same, but I think there's something to be said for it.
So let's switch over to the New Day, because I think you have two really good tag teams that are vying for the number one spot, the Vaudevillains and Enzo and Kaz. Enzo and Kaz win this match, right? Or do you think
it's going to be better?
Because all I'm saying is that you have if Enzo and Kaz win, then you have microphone gold on both sides.
Right. Yeah, that's the promos I want to see, and you know, I wasn't too high on the Vaudevillains, but I think the best work I've seen them do has been what they've done on SmackDown, and even the promo they cut was respectable on Raw. So I'm leaving this. I still gotta say they need to change that finisher, but like, I'm open to the possibility of these guys being a viable team, and I like what they're doing. I think them and Corbin. I'm enjoying what they're doing on the main roster more than I did over the last year plus of watching NXT.
So I was right about Corbin.
I never buried Corbin.
Yeah.
I told you why people didn't like him.
Yeah.
I thought there was something possibly there, but yeah, the run that he was having in NXT, yeah, it was flailing.
So I think the vaudevillains, I wouldn't mind seeing either team win, because I think what the vaudevillains bring is they really, and this is why I think I kind of gravitated toward the beginning, was because I see a lot of old school type tag teaming with them, right? And it's kind of like this case where these two guys by themselves aren't all that great, and when you put them together, they're still not all that great. You know what I'm saying? But they're steady, they're solid, and I think they're a very solid team in terms of what tag team wrestling was 15, 20 years ago, or maybe even 25 years ago. And it's kind of a throwback. I like the throwback aspect of them, and I like how you have the lesser of two parts to create something that's very solid and it works within the system. And I think that's why I liked them. And I think that's why when they got introduced to the main roster, I kind of knew that I was going to like them, just because I think both of the guys are talented, but they have no charisma by themselves. And I think you put those two guys together, even with the kind of the funny gimmick that they have, and I think it works. And it's one of those things where it's like kind of like lightning in a bottle, but it's not really lightning. It's probably like a mild thunderstorm in a bottle, but it works, right? It's like there's nothing overpowering about them, overwhelming about them, but I think they kind of set the stage for all the groups that can come up now, right? And with kind of your NXT champions that you have now, the alpha male,
American alpha,
yeah. I say alpha male. I was thinking of American males.
That's just talking about the alpha male Monty Brown.
Yeah, there you go with the
pounds
with the hair match. And I can't believe I think Donald Trump was a part of that too. So you have American Alpha as a team. I think you also have the
Revival.
Yeah, the Revival there too. So I think you need to have. I think the vaudevilles or whatever they're called, I think they can set the stage for these kind of groups that are coming up.
I don't think they need to set the stage. I think both of those teams are already better than the vaudevillains by a pretty good margin. But
the thing that you have with those two teams, with you have the Revival and American Alpha, is that they don't have a gimmick, right? I mean, it's purely based on wrestling and what they can do in the ring instead of like developing their characters as a gimmick.
Well, I mean, I think they both, yeah, American Alpha maybe not so much, but I think Revival has a gimmick. I mean, they're basically trying to paint themselves as like the second coming of the Brainbusters.
Yeah,
which
the Four Horsemen.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, they can't be the Four Horsemen unless they got a whole faction. But they,
well, hey,
they're trying to like
JR thinks anybody that any four guys put together are just as good as the Four Horsemen, right?
You mean JBL?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody can be the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, these guys are more really what the Brainbusters were. That's the, like that kind of tag team continuity.
A team you didn't like, by the way.
This is true.
Yeah.
But they're already so far and ahead away of what the vaudevillains are, and they have like a great tag team finisher. So, I mean, whatever. They're better workers. I think they're better talkers. I think they're better in ring. The whole package is better, but whatever. Vaudevillains have been respectable since they've come up to the main roster. I think they're more of a viable team than say the Lucha Dragons. I don't know if you want to get into your boys Epico and Primo and Serpico anytime soon, but like that could be interesting when those guys come back. But I mean, I think they're a fine team. I don't think they're as good as Enzo and Kaz, maybe in the ring, but like. I mean, Enzo and Kaz on the mic are so far ahead of them. Like that, I mean, it needs to be them and the New Day. But yeah, I think the vaudevillains have done better than I've expected. I don't know. I think they should really think about doing like a real kind of hipster throwback gimmick if they're gonna go gimmick, right? I think that could be, if they have it in them.
Where they make like drinks on stage.
Yeah. And yeah. And, yeah. Like and or they get really where, like.
They become mixologists and stuff like that.
They do things like that.
You know what they can say? They can say, brilliant.
Bring it.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Or they can go and, like, you know, talking about, like, all the stuff that they knew before everybody else knew. And, you know, I mean, I think that the hipster gimmick would really work right now. People want to hate hipsters. And I think they have, like, a lot of elements of something along that lines
anyway. They got to come out wearing skinny jeans and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, all that's, I think that would actually work for them. I think that would be, like, something better. And then that, and they come with, like, a legitimate finishing move. I think you got a really good tag team on your hands.
So would you be upset if they beat Enzo and Kazan? I mean, you think that's the wrong direction for them, or would you be okay with it?
I'd be upset just because, and it kind of goes back to what I'm saying with Cesaro. It's like, Enzo and Kazan never won anything. Like, in NXT, they're the longest tenured team, and they're, like, the only team on that roster that never held the tag team titles. So, I mean, at some point, you have to win for Enzo to keep talking the smack that he's talking. And he's doing a great job. But at some point, you got to win something. And I think they need to win this. Like, this would be the biggest win. Like, everyone always, you know, in a wrestling broadcast throws out, this is the biggest win this team's ever had. But this legitimately would be the biggest win that team has ever had, because they never actually held any titles when they were in NXT. So I think they need it for their momentum.
And I kind of think the thing, too, is that in order for that team to work, you really need to have, like, Enzo cut, like, a 5-minute promo. I mean, I think the last couple shows, he really hasn't... Well, the last Raw, he really didn't say anything. And you had Kaz kind of do the whole kind of Billy Gunn thing, you know, which is, I don't know, dude. I mean, it's fine if Enzo is, like, gives you, like, 3 or 4, like, really good lines. And then like, Kaz can come in and clean this stuff up. But the soft one, kind of promo, it's not your main thing, right? So, I don't know. You can't have Enzo, you know, say that he's a bona fide genie. You can't teach that, and Kaz is, you can't teach that, and then Kaz comes in and says, like, let me spell it out for you. You know, the guy, I mean, the promos that Enzo has cut, you know, I mean, just like, I'm thinking about the other day, like, you know, if they had a dime for every time they got beat up, they'd have 0 dimes. And even, like, you know, the worst thing that he can say about, you know, not the Acolytes, but about the Ascension is that, well, they're the Ascension, you know. I mean, there's nothing worse I can say about that. Yeah. You know, so
he did say he wanted to jump running on the beach and jump into his own arms, but you're looking for a little more than that, right?
A little bit more than that, yeah.
Yeah,
but still pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean
that's kind of like the Stacey King, right? Yeah. Let me step back and kiss myself.
Yeah. So, but the bottom line is, I think they need to win. I think they need to win that match for them to be able to keep the momentum correctly going the way that it's going. Let's see. What are you thinking about Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose? So I'm going to say, like, in general, I think you're kind of lukewarm on Dean Ambrose. But as I was kind of watching what they had going on, I think I was kind of starting to appreciate it a little bit more, and for a couple of reasons. One, you know, going back,
it's Chris Jericho, and you love Chris Jericho.
No, but it does have something to do with Chris Jericho. So going back to what we were talking about coming off of WrestleMania, it's like AJ Styles, like, really, like, while Jericho, like, kind of gave the rub to AJ in a lot of ways. You mentioned, like, AJ was really giving the rub to Jericho and kind of revitalized Chris Jericho by putting Jericho over. And I think that was pretty accurate. But I think what we're now seeing is, like, by him doing that and kind of, like, putting momentum back on Chris Jericho's side, it's made it so that now he can go on to the next feud. And, like, Dean Ambrose needs to win a feud, or else he's going to go into Bray Wyatt territory of, like, everybody wants to see him, and he's in a bunch of, like upper mid-card matches that he keeps on losing, and then at some point, like, you can't take him seriously anymore because he's just got to put everybody over. So I think this is a really logical feud to make. But I think you can't have Jericho and Ambrose mean something if it's not for the feud that AJ and Jericho really had. And then, you know, realistically, you had Dean Ambrose in kind of a holding pattern, putting him up against Brock Lesnar. Like, no one thinks he's gonna win that match. But now you can go and put him in a feud with Jericho, and he can come out and get on top and get the rub off of Jericho in a time where Jericho looks really strong, and you can really kind of transition and kind of slingshot Dean Ambrose, like keep him up right there. You know, maybe this isn't exactly the time for him to be a main eventer or be vying for that title, but you know, if things go as maybe we see and Roman Reigns goes heel, like you're saying down the line, right now you really position Dean Ambrose to where he's beaten the guy Chris Jericho that beat AJ, and he's put himself up, you know, around the top of contenders, and now you have him with someone that he'd have a logical feud with Roman Reigns. So like, I just think that there's a lot of potential in that feud. And you're also giving Dean a chance to go in a feud with somebody that he can do something with, because, I mean, you're kind of burying the guy by putting him against Brock. I mean, you're putting him in a high spot in the card, but there's really not much he can do with that. And I think, you know, it's shown with Jericho, like, you know, he put him in. I mean, he's a great worker on his own, but, you know, they can make some great matches when you put him in with these types of guys. And I think there's a lot of potential there.
I 100% disagree. I don't think Chris Jericho, I don't think beating Chris Jericho vaults you into like a potential title run. And it's not that I don't like Chris Jericho. I don't think beating Chris Jericho is a big deal. And at the same time, I don't think Dean Ambrose is one of those guys where, you know, you say, okay, you put him with a good worker like Chris Jericho and they can have a great match. The AJ Styles and Chris Jericho matches, they weren't all that great. I mean, they were good solid matches, but they weren't. But I wasn't sitting there going like, man, this is like the greatest match I've ever seen. I think Chris Jericho has his match, and I think it's a match that he can do with the talent that he displays right now. But I don't see Dean Ambrose straying away from his type of match either. Even if you put him in with a good, because he's been in with a ton of good workers, right? Mm-hmm. He's been in feuds with Kevin Owens. He's been in feuds with Bray Wyatt, and he has a standard match. His match is not an exciting match. I don't really sit there and go to watch a Dean Ambrose match and go, wow, like he stole the show. He's not a show stealer. I think he cuts a lot of corners with his spots that he has, and I think, to tell you the truth, I think Dean Ambrose is a guy that needs to be with someone. He needs to have one or two guys to kind of team up with and kind of be in a group, and I think that's his strongest aspect of it. He's had a year and a half to kind of be on his own, and while the fans have embraced him, his matches to me it leaves me wanting a lot more, and I don't think it has anything to do with Brock Lesnar. I don't think it has anything to do with the people he's going against. I have not seen him take the next step to really have a match where I'm really on the edge of my seat with. It's the same match over and over again. And I'm sorry to tell you this too, but I think Chris Jericho's match is like that as well. I think it's a solid match, but I don't think it's a match that's going to steal the show and where you're going like, wow, like what a great match. I mean, Chris Jericho is limited to what his style of match is. If you put Chris Jericho in Japan, in New Japan, and you put him, say, with a guy like Okada, and you put him with a guy like Nakamura, I think he has the same type of match. If he has a match with someone that is physically gifted, like the guy that got hurt,
Neville.
I think if he goes against a guy like that, I think that's where Chris Jericho is, because Chris Jericho is a very base Matt type wrestler, right? I mean, very, very, very good technically. He can deal with all the high spots that Neville is doing. He can tell a good story that way. But if you put him with a guy that he's very similar to in terms of the way they do their matches, like a guy like Dean Ambrose, I think Chris Jericho is limited, and I think Dean Ambrose is limited in that type of match. I haven't seen Dean Ambrose hasn't shown me anything where he can do the same thing, right? Like if he has a match with Neville, I don't think he can tell the same story that Chris Jericho told with Neville. And that's where I think Chris Jericho is better. But that's because Chris Jericho is dealing with a high spot guy. That can also is very good technically as well. I think Dean Ambrose over the long run is going to hurt a guy like Chris Jericho, right? At least with AJ could pull stuff out of there, right? And it's kind of funny because AJ's match on Raw, he didn't do his finisher was the elbow. It wasn't that. So maybe they're steering away from the Styles Clash. But This is a feud that I really have no interest in. I think if I watch the match, I'm just like, oh, it's a good match. But me personally, like, listening to your stuff, while it makes a lot of sense, it's kind of, to me, it's kind of like the thing of like 10 years ago where it's like, well, we need a computer in every classroom, or every student needs a computer. Okay, well, what are you going to do with that computer? I think that's kind of the same thing with the Chris Jericho argument, right? It's like, you know, Chris Jericho will, you know, can elevate Dean Ambrose and give him a rub. I don't think so, because I don't even think Dean Ambrose can give himself a rub.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying about Dean Ambrose. I'm not saying like that would be the main guy that I personally would be trying to push. But I think that the push that he's getting, I think it's kind of inevitable. And I think that if there's a guy that, I think that logically makes sense. I think they've positioned the pieces well. I think that's...
Yeah, logically it makes sense. I mean, everything you say logically makes sense. Yeah. But where's the emotion? Where's the feeling behind it? I don't think there's a lot of that.
Well, I think, yeah. And for me,
it sounds good.
Well, right? it sounds fine. It sounds better than I think a lot of things could be. I'm not as high on as a lot of people are on Dean Ambrose, right? So I think like it would I think that would be something that the majority of people would get behind and kind of make them happy. And I think it could have some good matches, not great matches necessarily.
I want to know what they're happy about, because right now they're happy about mediocrity. With Dean Ambrose, I mean, it's like he doesn't bring anything special. I mean, he's a good character. I think he has a ton of potential, but you know what? It's been a year and a half. It's time to start reaching your potential.
You know what people are happy about? He's not Roman Reigns.
Yeah, right. And I don't think. I mean, I think that's a pretty stupid thing. I mean, because they're not watching his matches. He has a weak ass finisher. His
finisher's fine. His punches are terrible.
I think that's a weak ass finisher. Like a double underhook DDT, dude. Come on, Gorilla. That's just all around this guy. Okay, he's decent on the mic, but it's not like when he had like the Ambrose Asylum. It's not like he was killing it. People are like jumping all and getting all crazy for the idea of what this guy is, but he's not delivering. And it's kind of like the. How can I relate this to? It's kind of like when you had like the conversation with your son about, there was some guy that they were trying to hotshot, and he had a match with Dolph Ziggler, and you told him, it's like, well, who was the point of that match? Like, why was that match good? And your son had like, oh, it's Dolph Ziggler was why that match was good. It's like he's vanilla, dude. That's what it is. He's vanilla, and he's trying to be this hard-edged guy, but when you really look at it, he ain't doing nothing special.
He ain't nobody.
He ain't even nobody. He be talking about Asylum all the time. But it's just kind of, it's the sheep mentality. Right? And I think he's a perfect example of, like, everybody cheers for him. And it's like, okay, well, make him the champion and see him fall on his face. And then you're going to say, like, oh, Dean Ambrose sucks. It's like the guy, what's the word I'm looking for? He hasn't had any obstacles put in his path, I think, that Roman Reigns has. He hasn't had, like, he hasn't been the guy. And people forget that, right? It's like people forget that Roman Reigns was put in a role, and Roman Reigns tried his hardest to get over by being put in that role. Dean Ambrose has had the freedom where he could just be himself or the character that he wants to be. But when all is said and done, the character's not that great. And if you're to, like, 5 years from now, take a snapshot of what Dean Ambrose is doing, and hopefully Dean Ambrose is over as all hell in 5 years and it's been one of the greatest matches of his life. And when they come out with a DVD of him, you're going like, man, like, oh, I get to see like his early matches, and you're watching his early matches like, what the hell is this? I'm like, this isn't nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm like, he's good now, but man, those matches sucked back then. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the case of like, some of the CM Punk stuff, right? It's like, CM Punk got over as all hell, like when he became a champion, and I bought the DVD, and it's like, oh, I get to see these early matches, and I'm starting going like, well, this isn't better than the stuff he did in the Nexus. I mean, he's way better now than he was back then, right?
And that was always my take. And he got better, and I started liking him. But yeah, some of the old stuff with him and Hardy was kind of like whatever, right? Yeah, no, I agree. I think I'm not. I don't have like the full on Dean Ambrose fatigue that I think you have. But I think you were more up on him early before I was.
I don't have a fatigue with Dean Ambrose. All I'm saying is, like, you call a spade a spade, right? I mean, I like Dean Ambrose, but he's not the second coming
I'm not trying to say like this man should be getting a championship run, but I think that he's someone that he's a good enough performer that he should be involved in some of the more important storylines that are going on, and I think this keeps him involved there, and I think it keeps Jericho involved there.
It gives a glimmer of hope for him to I can get that. Me kind of looking at it as a wrestling fan and seeing what these two guys are, I don't have the adulation, and I wouldn't say it's adulation, but I don't have kind of the innate sense of fandom that you have with Chris Jericho, right? I mean, Chris Jericho is who he is. There's a lot of aspects of his matches that I do not like. I don't like his stupid little spin he does when he's trying to put the lineman tamer on. I think that's a dumb spot. He has surprised me with the work that he's doing now. He has surprised me because it looks like the old Jericho, right? And this guy's like 40 some odd years old. He's still doing a lion salt, and that's impressive, right? And he does. I'm not saying that I don't like Chris Jericho. All I'm saying is, like, it's a very easy thing to say, like, oh, you know, like, Jericho, you know, is going to give the rub to this, to that. It's like, no, I mean, Chris Jericho is who he is. I mean, he's not like the main guy anymore. I mean,
no, he's not the main guy anymore, but, like, kind of Jericho being who he is, that's kind of like one of the main staples of what he's been over the last 3 years is, you know, having enough confidence in who he is and, like, being able to eat enough humble pie that he comes in and does jobs for guys. And like we said, he's had to do something as bad as do a WrestleMania job for Fandango. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's one thing. And this is kind of what my problem was over the last several years is, like, you're just jobbing him out so much that, yeah, it's becoming meaningless. Yeah. But what my whole point is because they did it the right way and they set him up with a feud with AJ and they didn't job him out.
And give him the US belt. Have Dean Ambrose chase him for 5-6 months because I know that Chris Jericho with a belt and on the mic can carry a good program for 5-6 months, and I think that's the way you develop Chris Jericho. I mean, develop Dean Ambrose if you do that. See, right now, like, what you're saying is, you know, it's the right thing to say, and I'm not saying that that's what you're trying to do. I mean, you truly believe what you're saying, and the whole thing is, like, there's some bastions points of truth to that, right? What I'm saying is that it's right now, to me, anything with Jericho is pretty hollow because of what you just brought up. And at the same time, it's like, it just seems like it's not developed enough, right? I mean, the stuff isn't developed enough to what they kind of did with AJ. I mean, you know, and even that felt kind of hollow as well. And I just kind of feel that, you know, Chris Jericho, he's just an old style type guy. Like, he knows how to get heat the way that people got heat 15, 20 years ago. And the wrestling's changed. It's a different kind of beast than it is right now. And I don't know. I just kind of see him as this elder statesman guy, and this is the stage of his career. But I kind of want the old Chris Jericho at the same time, too. And it's just kind of a case where I don't think he has, since he's not there for 2-3 years, that he really can't develop where he want, what direction he wants to go in. And I think that he kind of has this case where I think he reads kind of some of his own press clippings. He knows that he's kind of, you know, a guy that is well respected within the wrestling community. But when I say when you actually put it on wax, I don't think it translates. I think he's going more by his name than what he does in the ring, and that's kind of where I have that's where I stand right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to disagree.
Go for it. Yeah.
No, I mean,
yeah, nothing else. So,
agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree. Yeah, but good conversation.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure, Dad. let's go ahead and let's address the.
Wait.
Try wait. Go ahead.
Before we do that, let's. I'm going to assume you watched Access on Friday.
Yes.
And so.
Okada
and mm-hmm. And AJ.
AJ Styles.
Your thoughts.
Your thoughts. So, you watched AJ Styles versus Okada, Mike. I don't know. I think I have a little bit of a NXT fever in me where NXT is really becoming the show that I really look forward to.
More so than Access.
Now. More so than Access. There was about a 5-10 minute stretch in that match where it was just mind boggling. You know, like just I mean, it was a good match. It was a really good match. Now, really it was a good match, and there was 4 or 5 spots in a row. And even the end, I mean, like he pulls like the, I think he pulls like the clothesline. You know, he pulls his Rainmaker clothesline and stuff, and Red Shoes is like cheering him on or something like that. So, I mean, I thought that was funny, but a couple botches here and there. I mean, I think Okada messed up on the bridge German suplex, but he was able to really turn that around fast and to make it into a clothesline. Slow build. It was a good match. It was just kind of a case where I think the problem that you kind of have is that I think AJ, you're really seeing what AJ can do with the WWE style. And I think his WWE style is working really well. And so it's kind of hard to see AJ working the New Japan style. It was a good match. I mean, but I wasn't overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, I really look forward to when they have those entire show dedicated to one match. And they can show the entire match. So I like those kind of like 30, 40 minute. And I thought it was really good. It wasn't great. Like I kind of, when I saw who it was, I was like, oh, this is going to be like 5-star status right here. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as good as like, the very first one when I saw like the Okada Tanahashi for an hour. Right. It wasn't that. But I thought, yeah, I'll loosely use the term great match, but not like, I'm not going to put it in like an all-time classic level, but yeah, you know, those guys put in their work. They have like a really good, like they physically match each other well. They go through a good series of reverses and stuff. I thought Red Shoes was money. Especially that part when he went and he threw the Bullet Club out and
he's crotch chopping him and stuff.
Yeah, the force of him swinging his arm to point to the locker room was so strong that it knocked over one of the Young Bucks. Like it was some powerful stuff from Red Shoes. But as we've said, that guy, he's a mark for himself. Yes. But he makes the matches fun to watch. Maybe has he surpassed the Hitman in your mind as the greatest mark for himself in professional wrestling?
Yeah, he is the greatest mark for himself.
He's the greatest mark for himself.
Especially when, I didn't get the whole cheering. Like, he was cheering for Okada, and, like, yeah. You know, I thought that was a little bit too much. And I think that kind of took away from the match a little bit. I think Red Shoes kind of deterred the match a little bit. I mean, I think the whole thing, like...
He stole the show too much?
I think so, yeah. and that's kind of like... When you have the referee have the high spots in that match with the comedy angle, I think it takes away from the seriousness of the match, especially such an old type of like, I'm throwing you guys out, you know, that whole thing. I thought AJ's interaction with him in the early part was really good. He's like, you know, this is how you wrestle and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, but I don't know, dude, it was lackluster. I mean, I was kind of just watching it going like, okay, that's a really good spot. That's a really good spot. But I was trying to find it instead of it coming to me.
Yeah. There was nothing that did that really like just blew you away, right? It was just a very good match all around.
I wouldn't say it was a great match. I would say that it was a very, it was a good match.
Yeah.
It was a strong showing.
Yeah. Yeah. Not legendary, but very good. Not something that you would want to miss, right? It, like you want to watch that match.
Yeah.
But there's been better matches on
Nakamura versus Okada in the G1 Climax was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. But I just thought it was still a good enough of a match that it deserves our little
a little
footnote. New Japan corner that we have every week.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. So let's go ahead and
is it induction time?
I think it's induction time. I will say this, China, you know, it's like, so Prince passes away and then China passes away. And I think China got overlooked a little bit. And China has been on such a downward spiral since she's left WWE. It wasn't really that big of a surprise. Stone Cold was kind of saying that he was kind of, you know, it was kind of like a lost opportunity that she wasn't inducted into the Hall of Fame when she was alive. I still think that Jackie should have been inducted before China, because I think Jackie was the first kind of woman that Like, I remember she slammed Chris Benoit. I'm going like, what the fuck? I'm like, come on, dude. I'm like, how much you going to bury this Chris Benoit? I get slammed by Jackie. But she was kind of the, you know, she was kind of like the first kind of wrestler that could kind of go against men. And it was somewhat believable. I think China took that to the next level. I mean, China was in the main event picture for the world belt for a long time. She kind of started two people's careers in the WWE. Not that they needed her to do it, but you know, Eddie Guerrero really took off when he paired up with her, and then Chris Jericho as well when they were doing the Intercontinental back and forth for the belt. Really established Chris Jericho as someone that is at least involved in storylines with the company. I think China, you know, China could hold her own against men, and they played her that way. She also started the whole kind of Playboy, posing for Playboy craze and stuff. So she did a lot. She did a lot of things within that company, and she was a really good addition to DX. I mean, she was in the first DX, and her being in there really made Shawn Michaels and Triple H kind of a good type of group. She was the muscle of that group, which is unheard of for a woman. But when it got down to it, I mean, when she tried to have her own character and her own promos, she fell flat. But at the same time, I mean, she was good for the business. She was great during the Attitude Era. And I think it's a case when you kind of look at all the things that she did, her body of work in the WWE, I think she had a really great career within the company.
You think DX would have been what it was without China?
No, I don't. I don't think it would have been. I think they would have been successful, but I think they were successful out of the gate because they had. So first of all, you have Shawn Michaels. Triple H at that time wasn't established,
right?
And a lot of people didn't like Triple H.
Right. Well, that's because you're mentioning like that she really kind of helped out Jericho and Guerrero, but Triple H, right? Yeah. A lot of his success should probably be attributed to
she established them right away because she was a gimmick, right? She was a sight to see. And I mean gimmick in a good way, right? Like, I'm not going to say that she brought credibility, but when she came out, it's like, so first of all, you have Shawn Michaels playing this heel character that you've never seen before, right? Like, he's been a heel before, but for him to, like, go off the deep end when he was primed as, like, the number one babyface, and then he all of a sudden becomes the biggest heel. And then Triple H is there, and Triple H, you know, nobody really knew who Triple H was. She was kind of the person that... you know, eyes stayed on the TV because it's like, who is this? She's built as all hell, and all of a sudden, and she's playing the enforcer role as well. So they don't take off as fast as they did without her. You know, we forget about Ravishing Rick Rude too. I think Rude added a lot to that group as well. So,
I never saw Rude as part of DX. Yeah. I know he was in it, but I wasn't watching WWE at that time. That's why, like, most of this, you know, I'm gonna kind of. I'm trying to ask you questions because you were more watching like when DX kind of
she was a spectacle,
right?
And she was like she was a woman that you never saw before, and she pretty much kind of like she was the diecast, right? And she was like she was the diecast mold of that character. You never saw a character like that before with her, and she could go toe to toe with guys, and it was believable, mm-hmm. And her winning the Intercontinental Belt. That was believable too. I was going like, oh man, there's no way that she should win. I was like, yeah, it's believable. She, you know, she can win it. And there was like a small little window where she was actually like, I think there was a case where she was fighting for the number one contendership of the heavyweight belt. She lost it, but it was believable back then too. Like if she would have won, I'm like, okay, where does this go? Can she be the first like female world heavyweight champion? And I think that at a time they were at least thinking about it, and that's unheard of back then, and that's unheard of today.
Yeah,
well, I mean, you can't say like if Charlotte vies for the world heavyweight belt, right. It's like, you know, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, no, yeah. I think there's that. I think part of what made that also work too is I think also with the influx of all these like really talented like light heavyweight cruiserweight types that were coming in from WCW, it's like the traditional Vince McMahon like roided up. Champion was not someone that she would have been viable against, but physically, I mean, she was bigger than Jericho, she was bigger than Guerrero, she was bigger than Malenko, she was not muscle, not thickness muscle wise bigger than Benoit, but like taller, and you know, at least physically you could see, okay, this is someone that So I think that was pretty helpful, and all those guys being good workers too. Yeah, I pretty much started seeing China when she was already like pretty well established as who she was. So I didn't get to see like the beginning of DX and how much she contributed to the rise in them. But I mean, you did a pretty good retrospective of what her career was, and I think all the stuff that she accomplished, the firsts, and like the character she was. I mean, I think she should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, obviously, it's more of a personal reasons thing, and there's a lot of that with the politics of the Hall of Fame in WWE. But on her merits alone, on her merits and what she did for the company and in the business, I think it warrants her being a Hall of Famer.
Well, she kind of created the Divas Division, and she got so big that she got out of the Divas Division, and
created it just to have people for her to go against.
Yeah,
until it became pointless.
Yeah, it never worked, right? But the thing is that the divas that came in after, she's kind of funny. I mean, she's kind of this. She's a pioneer, but at the same time, she kind of set back the Divas Division a little bit. I think her posing in Playboy was an easy way for other divas to kind of like make a name for themselves on the mass media market. And it took a long time to kind of get away from that. And it has nothing to do with her, but she was successful. She was successful in that area too, in terms of posing for Playboy and stuff. And that was huge back then. I mean, she was always kind of one of those women where like, she wasn't attractive, but you kind of want to see what she had. Right. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like this thing is like, well, she's not that pretty,
but you feel weird.
Yeah. It's like, do I want to see her nude? Sure. Why not? But she did have, she had the flex appeal, but she also had sex appeal too. And it's kind of funny, there was just something about her. It was just like, there's this intangible quality about her that, you wanted to see what she was doing. You wanted to kind of, she wasn't feminine, but her body was, she had a good look to her body at the same time. So it was just, she was just kind of one of these people that she kind of walked down the middle, and there was like, sex appeal, there was athleticism, and I think she fit that role really well. And I think she got a big head, and that was probably, that was one of the main reasons why she left. And it was kind of a case where when all these other, divas like Trish Stratus and Lita started coming up, these are people that she could have had good matches with, but she thought she was above them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, in the end, that's what kind of curtailed her career in the WWE. And I think that's one of her few failings that she had. But her run in the WWE was one of the most successful ever. I mean, it was a very successful run. She was over as all hell. And, she sold tickets.
Yeah. All right. I can't. Yeah. Okay. Nothing to dispute there.
All right, so we're going to get into Golden Mike, and for nobody that does know that, if nobody caught on yet, we put her in our Hall of Kayfabe, so she is inducted into the Hall of Kayfabe
posthumously.
And it is probably something that we probably could have done, a lot earlier, but her passing away sadly kind of made you realize. Like, I look back at her career and go, like, yeah, it sucks, dude. I mean, like, she was good when she was there. So we're going to do the Golden Mike right now. She was never good on the mic, but she brought out good promos from other people, and this is where this one's coming from. If I get through this, play this right. And of course, we wait.
Now, speaking of lips, on to you, China. The Rock sees the way you lick your lips, the way you pucker your lips. Every time the Rock comes around, you obviously got a fetish for the Rock, and you suffer from Rock fever. And the Rock says this: next time you go one-on-one with the Great One, instead of nailing the Rock and the people's jewels, he wants you to get down on your knees. Uh-oh, don't get excited, China. No, don't get excited, not yet. He wants you to pucker your lips like this. And when you do that, the Rock will come in, he'll pucker his lips too. Close your eyes and get ready to feel the Rock's electricity. Then the Rock will bring his lips about an inch from yours. Step back, look at you, take his boot, kick your teeth so far down your throat, you'll stick a toothbrush straight up your to brush them. Man, you three jabronis, remember this. Out there are literally millions and millions of Rock fans, and they all chant his name. Rocky, 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 Rocky. Cameraman, this puppet holding all the rocks up. Michael Cole, this microphone stinks. What is on your hand? What is the problem? If you smell what the rock. Well, folks, we think we're going to hear from Triple H next.
We think we're going to hear from Triple H next. Am I supposed to comment on the China side of it or the Rock side of it?
Just in general. I mean, I think when I post this to Twitter, I'm going to have to include the link of the video because what the Rock does in the video itself is classic. But I mean, what I like about this one is like this is like the Rock before he became like really like super popular, right? Like where he became like the guy on the mic. And it's everything down the line, right? Like all of his stuff. And he's even, you know, so the whole thing with Michael Cole is that, Michael Cole has like all his shirts, all of the Rock shirts on his head and stuff. Cause like Michael Cole couldn't look at the Rock while he was doing the interview. So he'd put his shirts on and stuff. And so he's like, what is that smell on your hand or whatever? So the Michael Cole puts a hand to his face and he pushes the hand into Michael Cole and stuff. So just classic stuff throughout, right?
Do you think, that was a work or a shoot?
Oh, it's a work, dude.
I'm just curious if maybe the Rock seemed to get a legitimate laugh out of shoving Cole's hand into his face. I know the shirt on the head thing is a work, but I was almost wondering if he didn't pull a fast one on Cole with the hey, what's wrong?
No, because I mean, because Cole, like, they show Cole and he's still like checking his hand out to see if it smells.
He may have sold it afterwards. Yeah. But,
Michael Cole can't sell anything.
Well, go ahead. I don't know. I hate Cole, but like Cole as being just this dorky tool. That
how are we going from like the Rock in China? You start talking about Cole, dude.
Yeah, it's like that was the best that Cole ever worked when he was just like being this tool, holding the microphone for the Rock while the Rock cut great promos and clowned on him. He was a good foil for the Rock, and that's pretty much the best thing that he's ever contributed. Yeah, this is like in that time when pretty much every promo The Rock cut was a classic. So had like a lot of his good one-liners and the good smack talk. It was all there for The Rock. And back when, I mean, he had his couple of catchphrases, but he was coming with majority of kind of original stuff every time he came on and started talking the trash. So yeah, I mean, I think we could probably have a few months
we could do a whole show about the Rock's promos, and maybe we do that. But yeah, I mean, this is all his good early stuff, right? Yeah, like chanting his name, the Rocky chant,
the command he had of the audience to where he would just like start saying and you can hear them, and then pretty much everybody on command knows it's time for them to start going Rocky Rocky before he even gets to the part where he tells them they're chanting his name, or sometimes they just wait right for when he says it and then they just on command. So like, I mean, that's one thing.
It was fresh.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And that was one thing that he had that maybe nobody else had, was just like exact command of like when he wanted them to say what they wanted them to say, had like a real catalog of catchphrases at a certain point that he could lead them into it and then just let the crowd do it. So
It's sorely missed, right?
Yeah, and then it makes it so, like, I still enjoy seeing The Rock. I know you haven't really liked seeing The Rock come back.
No, I've never said that.
You've been pretty critical of
I've never been critical.
Oh, wow. but when you go back and see stuff from that era, and then
The Rock gets a free pass.
Right, but, right? Like, well, but here's the thing, like, and I think sometimes it's different for me in terms of who we deal with, right? So, like, if I'm talking to, you know, some of these kids and some of them watch wrestling, and then me trying to explain how good The Rock was on the mic and then compared to what they're seeing of him now, like, he gets a pass, and some of it's good, but it's hit and miss. But it reminds you when you kind of go back and see some of his stuff from, like, from the early 2000s and the late 90s, just like, yeah, that is exactly why, that's exactly how I remember him being.
Yeah.
And that's
the best promo in the business. I mean, yeah, by far. I mean, Flair was great, but I think The Rock just took it to a whole different level
in his prime. And again, like, and to go on and, I'll use what you were saying with Jericho. The business changed from the time that Ric Flair was cutting like his in prime promos to when The Rock was. But in his day and age, Ric Flair was, I think, every bit as good as what The Rock was doing.
Oh, look at that! Yeah,
well, I think he was. Yeah. I think. I mean, Ric Flair might be the best mic guy there ever was, and Rock is probably number two or 1A or however you want to phrase it.
Oh, look at that! Hey, wow!
I mean,
I'm over flipping Wilton right now, dude.
I gotta defer to longevity, man.
All right, so we got those squared away, and then the other big kind of thing is the return of Better Call Saul. No, I mean
the GOT
of Game of Thrones. So. This is a first for me. I don't think I've watched a Game of Thrones episode where I didn't know it was going to happen until, except for the first one where I saw it even before I knew what the books were. Yeah, and that first episode of Game of Thrones that I saw, I was blown away. No, the first like three or four.
No.
Spoiler alert. No, I'm joking.
Did you watch it because I told you to watch it, or you watched it independently?
Game of Thrones?
I watched it
independently.
Okay.
Because it was on HBO, and that's when I moved back from Colorado and we're flipping around like, what's this Game of Thrones stuff? Mm-hmm. And what happened was we watched a couple, and then you told me to start. I watched like the first two or three episodes. I was like, dude, something major happens at the end of every episode. It's kind of a gimmick. It's like, it's okay. It's nothing great. And then you said, hey, you need to start watching it. And then I started watching it. And then when It Is a Gift, when he died.
What?
Yeah, no, oh, no, I that wasn't my reaction. No,
no, you spoiled it for me.
Oh, he died. He died.
What? I didn't get that far yet, man.
Damn, dude, he got that was a great promo right there. Yeah. Kevin wants
that. That's what the Vaude villain should be doing.
Okay, Kevin wants the smell in your hand right now. So then this is the first time that I don't know what's going on, and. It was kind of, I wouldn't say refreshing, but it was kind of cool. I was kind of going like, you know, I think I know what's going to happen to Jon Snow. I think the Red Woman's going to resurrect him and stuff, but it was very slow. You know, it didn't happen in this episode, and it looks like they're going to get back into Bran I know what happens with Bran because they haven't said it, you know, they haven't put in the story. It's in the book, but they haven't kept up with it. Yeah. So, yeah, and the whole thing is, you know, Tyrion being a Marine. I mean, that's not in the book, so I don't, you know, that's something new. It was a very slow episode, but it was a great episode. I mean, I think the Sand Vipers, or whatever they're called, the Sand Snakes. I thought that was great, dude. It was good. I enjoyed it.
I thought so. It's funny, the couple of ladies that I taught Game of Thrones with at work, they're like, oh, nothing happened. I don't like that episode. Like, what do you mean nothing happened? It's like, I thought that, like, there was a pretty... I thought they let it pretty clear that Jon Snow's going to be alive.
Yeah.
Like, when they were kind of doing the close-up on his body and the wolf's just howling in the background. I mean, I got to believe that's Snow, like, in the wolf, like, hollering, trying to get out of whatever room he's locked in. And then when... I really like... And I don't know... You know, I've never read any of the books, so... I don't know, but Sir Davos is one of the characters I really enjoy in that show, and like Sir Davos and those other Night's Watch guys coming to bring him in, and like especially when he's like, you know, we're gonna need that wolf, right?
Yeah,
kind of even more indicator to me because they're bringing Jon Snow in, like they gotta fight, they're gonna have to fight their way out.
Yeah,
so I don't know, I thought to me it was pretty clear that he's still alive, and then. The other thing with the Red Woman is, like, I know it's like she kind of touched his face, like, when he was laying there. And then I'm wondering, like, I was kind of wondering if, like, her, like, kind of revealing herself, if, like, that was her kind of, like, passing, like, whatever her, if she had to use, like, her life or whatever to resurrect Jon Snow. And then that was kind of her, like, final, like she was going to die kind of like in her state that she was, because she pretty much was diminished at that point. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of
that, that's an interesting theory there. I didn't even catch it. I thought that was more of a case that was her true form and she had to keep up her youth appearance was her facade, and then you know, when she went to bed every night, maybe you know she had a
It could well be that. Like maybe that is what she does every night. But
so the whole thing with the wolf is that it's established like Arya, and even Jon. So Jon Snow. So Arya has lived through her wolf in early parts of the book, and Jon Snow, and then Bran as well. Bran can go into his wolf and kind of run around stuff. Jon Snow has had dreams about, you know, hunting as a dire wolf, but he doesn't know that he can do that. So that's another thing as well. I didn't catch up too much. I mean, your theory on the wolf is pretty good, and I can kind of see like, well, you know, he got really mad when what's his name knocked on the door and stuff. What's that guy's name? The
I don't know those guys' name.
Great guy. Great character though, right? Like the
friend. You're talking about the friends. You're talking about Davos.
No, I'm not talking about Davos. I'm talking about was it? His name starts with like a TH or whatever. It's the guy that killed him. What's his name? Something. Thumper.
The guy that's with Sansa. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Theon. You're not talking about Theon.
No, I'm not talking about Theon. I'm talking about the
Night's Watch guys.
The Night's Watch guy.
Yeah, I don't know.
The main guy. His main antagonist the whole time.
Oh, the old guy?
Yeah.
When he was like giving his speech about you're right. I can't.
Thor. It's like McAllister or something. I don't know what it is, but.
Alistair,
yeah. Really, really good character, by the way. And I've. You hate that guy so much, but there's something about it that you kind of like at the same time. But, you know, when he knocked on the door and the way the dire wolf reacted, that could be Jon Snow, whatever it is. But just good all around. And even. Daenerys, so the whole kind of thing where she needs to go to where all the widows are and stuff. That's kind of in the book as well, and she's actually gone there before. But the story's so different now that it'd be pretty interesting to see. It was slow, but it was just kind of a nice refresher, and you know, even like seeing like Tyrion like walk Meereen and just like him and the
Varys.
Him and Varys, like, there's, like, all these people around them, and they don't care, right? They're just walking. They're just, like, walking. They have no fear whatsoever. And then, you know, you're kind of seeing, like, okay, Tyrion's going to take over Meereen and rule Meereen, and he did such a good job at King's Landing that he can probably do the same for Meereen. So, you're going to start seeing what Tyrion's really good at, you know, and so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, too. So, yeah. Arya's story, I already kind of know it, you know, with her being blind. You know, I know that the progression of that storyline has already happened in the book. But, you know, overall, it is what it is, right? Stannis doesn't die in the book. He's not dead in the book yet. So it's always kind of a thing where it's like, well, what the heck's going on?
And, yeah, I liked that part, too, where Brienne came in and saved Theon and Sansa. And I think, like, they're even doing a good job with, like this is the... I think maybe it's because it's the first episode and I haven't watched the show in so long, but I think like the disdain that I once had for Theon has kind of completely like gone away, and like he's like fully a sympathetic character, and like, and as much as throughout the show I have never cared for Sansa, like him like trying to help Sansa, so it's making me actually kind of start to care about that storyline. But like I've always really thought Brienne was this really interesting character. So it's not even, I think, as much as, like, I care about Sansa as much as, like, I want Brienne to succeed, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. how she has that, like, she has that stigma about her now that everyone that she protects gets killed. And so, like, I like how loyal she's been to the Stark family. And, you know, at any point she could have just said, like, you know, I've done as much duty as I can to this family, and she doesn't want me, but you could tell like she's been following and waiting until Sansa got in trouble and then sprung out and saved him, like saved her when she needed it. So I'm very curious to see what direction that thing heads in. But oddly enough, the person I probably care the least about right now of that whole trio, well, I'm cheering for Podrick because he gets the ass, but I care about Sansa probably less than Theon or Brienne right now.
Yeah. I think the other character that's made a complete, like, 180, if I'm using that term right, is Jaime, right? I mean, Jaime was a guy that everybody hated. And then over the course of these six seasons, he's been the guy that's been most you most relate to because he's had the most growth, and like now you kind of see him as like this really like good like virtuous character, mm-hmm. and it'll be interesting to see like you know because I hate the religious leader guy I hate the guys that his army and
the
stuff.
The guy with the brand on his head.
Yeah, well, it's the main sept guy, the septon, and then his army of, with guys with the brands on their head. Right. I mean, even like in the books, like when Cersei's like, yeah, she's like reinstate those guys. I was like, dude, like what the hell are you doing? It's like that's going to be your downfall, right? It's like you don't create another army that's going to like that's going to outnumber the Kingsguard, and that's what she did. So you know them going, you know there might be some that starts in the temple and stuff. It might be a fight or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think there's going to be a big bloodbath in there, but what everybody's forgetting is that every season has one episode. Yeah, what? No, not that. But every season there's one episode that just like totally like just blows your mind, and it's going to happen this season, and I have no idea what it's going to be, which is even better.
Because usually you had an idea.
I knew, like the Red Wedding. I knew about the Red Wedding. Right. I knew Joffrey's death was going to happen. I knew about the fight between. Your boy.
The mountain and Oberon.
Yeah. But I thought it was really cool that they killed the brother, you know, like whatever that place is called, but with the sand snakes and stuff. The thing that really pissed me off though was that the guard of the king of over there, like that was a really cool character, and just like in 1 second you squashed him. I mean, he dies like just like this little like little knife. It's like, dude, I'm like, in the books this guy was the man, dude. Like he could kick anybody's ass and was like just like a really like kick-ass character, and then he's dead like that. I'm like, what the hell, dude? Like that was one of my favorite characters. So but it was cool. I really liked when the two sisters, like, you know, which one do you want to kill you and stuff, and then it comes out of nowhere like the girl
right through the back of the head.
Yeah, the whale rider or whatever from the, she was in the movie The Whale Rider or something like that. Yeah. So yeah. Good first episode. I'm a proponent of slow moving elements,
right? Yeah, I've noticed like every time we talk about a show in the last like 3 months, the main thing you like about it is like the storytelling is really slow.
Yeah.
I like it because it's so slow. Which generally like that's one thing that people don't like in a show, but like I remember, you're always talking about, I like Better Call Saul because it's so slow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Better Call Saul was really good too. I don't know if you've been keeping on that series, but
I never knew until this past week that that the guy that plays Jimmy's older brother was the dude from Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, Lenny and Squiggy.
Lenny. I never knew it was Lenny. Someone told me at work. I'm like, wait, what?
It's been a long time since those days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate that brother character, man. I can't stand that. And like just when you start feeling like empathy for the guy, he turns around and does like a straight dick move to Saul, dude. Yeah. So it's And then Jessica Jones is another slow moving series or season that was, you know, the payoff was good on it. So, you know, Game of Thrones, it was a good first introductory. I want more, right? It's like and the thing that sucks about it is like, okay, I know what's gonna happen. I'm like, now I don't know what's going to happen. Now I got to wait like all you other schmucks that haven't read the book, right?
Yeah.
So, fool me once, shame on me, or something like that, and just don't do it again, right? All right, so we're at Movie Scale number 45. We haven't introduced ourselves yet, but...
I did in the beginning.
You did?
And I didn't mention the episode number.
You did or you didn't?
I did not.
There you go. So I got my boy, Better Have My Donuts over here. He's been coming in strong for the past... about 10-15 episodes. I'm not doing all the talking, even though I love to talk. The good looking guy and the guy that is always right on this podcast is me, and that's Bad News Ramen. So we have my man Better Have My Donuts over here. I have Bad News Ramen right here, and we're going to play a song by Jay Dilla, another guy that was taken way too fast from us, and we'll check you out next week. Word 'em up. And on the cool shit.